We started talking a little about Tichaloymas of Yosef in the beginning. It needs a little beer because when Yosef is telling over to his brothers the Yaakov Avinu, the Chaloymas that he had, which indicate that he's going to rule over them, like they said, Hamolech Timlach Aleinu, the Marshal Timshal Bono. And it was very enough that he had their relationship with him. It says, Lo Yochu Davri L'Sholem, Vayisifu Oitzino, Vayisnu Oitzoi. So why would he go and tell them that he had a cholam whereby he's going to be a melech over them? Same thing weiter. First he told about Ma'olam Alum, B'Sar Chasod, and then about the stars and everything. Vayisifu Oitzino, so why should he do such a thing? You could, of course, expect that they should be so upset. They should say, Hamolech Timloch, you think you're going to rule in Moshe Timshel Bon, and same thing weiter, Havoy Novoy, Ani Yimcha Achechel, Ishtach Vosef Horotze. At Rabbi Yitzhak, many times in order to understand something in the Torah correctly, so the place to begin is by looking in the Halacha. Where it tells us what everything really, really means. Halacha tells us how to deal with it, Lamaisa, but we can understand what the Yetzem Inyan is. When it comes to Chaloimus, there are certain halachas. There's a Gemara at the end of Brocha, not one Gemara, but many Gemaras, which go deeply into the Inyan of Chaloimus and tell us Halachas Lamaisa and the general approach to Chaloimus. There are two important things that the Gemara says. One is that if a person has cholam, benafshei aguma olav, so it says that you should be made to cholam in front of three close friends, and they should tell you cholmatova chazaisa. And they should say various things in the back of the Siddurim. You always have it, the Seder of Atavas Cholam, the Psukim that have to be said, he says this many times, and so on and so forth. The whole Seder of Atavas Cholam. There's also another thing that Gemara says there. Gemara marach very much on it. Said that by Chaloimus, I hold my sword by Averov, by Chaloimus, Hakal Holochakar Peh. The Pisroin, the interpretation of a Cholim, is something that counts very much, especially the first response to the Cholim. Could make something happen which wouldn't have happened had the Cholim not been interpreted that way. Yosef, of course, was aware that there was a tremendous sinner. So, I would suppose, if anything, that Yosef would make an attempt to remove the sinner. Because he was the object of the sin, and he would have done anything in the world to remove it. I mean, sin is a terrible thing. So, Yosef approached his brothers and said, "Shimunu hachalom hazeh shechalomti." Now, right away, before telling them anything, before even mentioning the details of the chol, the very fact that he came to them shows two things. It shows nafshei aguma olav; he's very upset, because that's what the halacha says. Whoever is choyl mechol and nafshei aguma olav, yitivenu b'fnei gimel oyavim. So, to tell over cholim, the halacha requires that it should be nafshei aguma. And to whom do you tell it? B'fnei gimel oyavim. The three people have to be good friends, people who like it. So there was a double message. The very fact that he told the Kohen, the double message that Yosef is delivering. Number one, this dream would suggest that he should be a ruler, a melech, and a moshe. It bothers him, it troubles him. It's nafshei aguma. Because you're not supposed to tell a cholam when you're happy over the cholam. It doesn't say anywhere that you tell over such cholam. It says clearly in halacha, you tell a cholam when you're nafshei aguma. So he was happy, he was very unhappy over the cholam. So the very fact that he told it over shows that he has no interest in being gemelech. And it bothers him, it upsets him very much. He needs to have hatovas cholam from a cholam that suggests that he should be a melech. The second thing that it says, the halacha b'ayin, is that he feels that his best friends in the world are his brothers. And that's the one that he has to go to. So, yitigane b'fnei gimel in oihapo. And if anything, it should be a clear indication that he doesn't consider them soinim, or that if there is a sinner, he considers it to be temporary. But really deep down, they're friends. You know, there's Ochutzori Yavola. You have a friend who is not that perfectly friendly, but when there's a Tzora, then he comes to your rescue. And like the Avraham Avinu and Lloyd, couldn't stick it together. They had trouble with each other. He poured it no me alloy. But when there was, you know, trouble from the outside, in Asmuel Veimino, in Mayorin Basmila. So Avram was willing to put his wife on the line to help Lloyd. There are many friendships like that. When it's nafshei aguma lo, so you go to a person that you consider to be deep down your real friend, who's interested in your welfare, who's going to be mate of the cholam properly. So right away, Yosef was telling them two things which should have mitigated the sinner and helped resolve the problem. Number one, that he's aguma, nafshei aguma, the whole entire prospect of being a melech. Number two, that he's number two, that he considers them to be his best friends. But sinam mikalkelos es hashurim. So rather than taking the message and hearing what he had to tell them, because they're sinners, so you get the wrong message. That's Pshat Mekalkelos es Hashurim. And what did they say? They said, Hamolech Timlo Chaveinu with Moshe Timshel Bono. And the second they said those words, so the other halacha tells us what the din is. Hakol Holoch Acharapet. So by saying those words, they were koveya that he should be a melech. They made him into a melech. If not, they could have said, oh, the cholam means something else entirely. That you'll be a farmer. Right? And your aluma is a chvesvas. By saying that, hamolech timlech, hamoshel timshel, immediately they were koveya, they interpreted the cholam. That was kolach alayim tzolchan achar tzeh. So that's why by Yisif Oitz Noyasoy, because ki'ilu, they themselves now are personally responsible for his malchus over them. So you take a look at three te'usim. Right? Number one, the te'us that they didn't realize nafshei aguma, they didn't realize they were oyevim, and that they were the koveya, the cholam, to be a nevuah for malucha because of their interpretation of Tachlal Chafrat, which shows us what sinna could do. About that, when we say sinna kelkelus as hashura, it's not just a nice mind of kazal people who do things out of sinna. They plan and they plot, they scheme, and they destroy themselves in the process. They're totally oblivious to the consequences of what they're doing, because sinik makalkel sashura works a number of ways. Number one, it focuses their entire thought on how to hurt the object of their sinner, the person they hate. and all they see is bad in that person. They can't see any good because they hate him, and anything that's good about him, it will upset them. And when it says the it's Lashon Hara, if you say a good thing about a person, to his soine. And that's one of the ways to, in which Lashon Hara is told. Why? Because it hurts the person, it upsets him. That he's saying, to discover that there's anything good about his son. I mean, the old psychologist could tell you that when people come to them who have trouble with their relationship and they start venting their spleen and saying all terrible things one about the other, and the therapist will say, tell me one good thing about the other part. Something, there must be something. After all, you've been together for a long time, tell me something good. And they would think seriously, and using their intelligent minds, they would come out more often than not saying, absolutely, I can't remember even one good thing. Nothing good. That's the way it is, because the sinner blocks the mind from seeing any good. So this beautiful message that you're my best oyev, and that it hurts me to even imagine that I have something over you. So it's a beautiful message, but you can't hear it because the soine just doesn't hear anything good about the person that they hate. The second thing that Sinu Mekalkelus HaShura does is it blots out the mind from looking at anything. When you focus so directly upon a single point, you don't see anything around that point. You don't see the periphery. And therefore you don't see the consequences of what you do. Now, I want to make a very important point. We're talking here about the Shiftei Kohu, where Tzadikim Nifloim, and whatever they did is beyond our capacity to criticize. That's for sure. We're not in any position to do that. But one thing is clear, that whatever is written in the Torah HaKadosh is here to teach us something. And we're supposed to learn from it. And Torah speaks about the gnai of sinat. So our Kohen was supposed to look into it and hear clearly what happens when a person has sinat. They burn with sinat to the degree that they can't see anything else but the sinat and secondary considerations, which may prevent tremendous harm and trouble to themselves, is totally ignored. A person is not a royas hanoilot if he's in a matzav of sinner. I'll just give you this example of a person who would say hamolach timloch and moshal timshal, and at the same time risk by saying these words the very thing that they're trying to prevent from happening. But the soine doesn't see consequences because the soine's mind is focused, as it were, evil. Like you have a focusing lens which takes all the light that passes through it and focuses on one point, and you can make a big fire burn. And I've tried it. All you have to do is hold it up to the sun and put something under it, because an intense light is could be very harmful. But I'm not talking about that aspect of it. I'm talking about the aspect of not seeing anything other than that single spot that they're focusing their mind on. And I say this because a person has to be aware of what goes on. In a rational moment, then you could be aware of these in your mind and think about them many times. And when it comes, it has to show them, but it's bound to happen. If you're in a massive way, you're assigning to somebody, and your thoughts begin racing, and emotion begin building up to a point where it's soon going to explode. And just remember that you're sort of shutting off the channels of rational thought. And a mind works irrationally, which is the third thing, actually, other than the first two that I told you. Just like there's a person who's an irrational creature, you know, the doctors may call him by some medical term, and then you say he's sick, right? They'll call it that he's psychotic in some form of psychosis, and whatever it is, but irrational thinking is a very bad muscle. But what Kalkelos HaSashurim means exactly that. I want to call attention to one thing. It says, HaMolech Timlech Aleinu Imoshel Timshel Bono. See, the boy said, listen carefully. HaMolech Timlech Imoshel Timshel. It's very important. Because being a melech could be one of the most beautiful things in the world. You can't have a society without power, without someone at the head of it, a leader. I mean, what will happen in a place where there's anarchy? There used to be these anarchists in the 20s and the 30s, right? If anybody heard about that movement, it's been pretty much dead now, but it was a big feature then. There were two people who were killed then by the government, Sacco and Manzetti, and they were supposed to be the leaders of the anarchists. No one ever proved it. But it was, what did they hold? They held that the nature of man is basically kind and gentle, and it's governments that bring out the worst in people. Other of it. It's the power-hungry people that ruin others by devouring them in their thirst for shlita. Best would be to be leave people alone, and there shouldn't be a government at all. Of course, who would build roads and take away the garbage and do a thousand other things? That nobody really thinks of. In order to keep a society going, you have to have a malchus. Chazal tell us the nature of men is inherently vicious and has to have a malucha in order to control his waywardness. No, don't we say it in Pirkei Avos? Heaven mispalel b'shloimah shel malchus. She'el mole moira oh, it's not for the fear of malchus. Ish esreyeu chaya bloi. One person would swallow up the other one alive. So you do need a malchus in order to prevent people from destroying each other. A benevolent malchus is the most wonderful thing in the world. In the sense that we remember with great love and dreams of the future when we speak about malchus beis David, Shlomo HaMelech, the good malachim, Chizkiyo, the malachim who really brought happiness and strength and peace to Klal Yisroel. That's why we speak about the Melech HaMashiach, Lachad Lovim. Gidrei Malchus is something that is extremely important, but it's a Malchus that has to be based on tremendous bittul of looking for personal glory. Once there's personal glory, so it's again personal. A search for glory is one of the things that Rabbi say. Sin is not the only thing. It's one of the things that turn a rational being into an irrational monster, and who destroys everybody in his path. So a melech could be a tool for harm, and it could be a tool for help. But a real melech who follows the mishpatei hamlucha is the greatest bracha that could be. But very often, melechim lose sight of what their real objective is. He said, I say over always the pasuk in Kehelet. The pasuk says over there, the Yisra Neretz Bakoil Hu Melech Lasode Nevod. Right? What does that mean? Yisra Neretz, the Yeser, what one land has over another. Right? There are certain lands, Rabbi said, where it's nice to live. You want to live in America, or live in Eretz Yisrael. You have a civilized country. What would happen if you go decide to transfer your dwelling place to Burundi or Rwanda or some of those places. Okay? Like they call it the third world or the fourth world. So it's a world where Yesh Yisrael Chayim B'loi. His Moira, the Malchus, is just another one of some tribal, you know, cannibalistic group that goes around the whole day. I mean, they killed hundreds of thousands of millions in the search for power. Yisra and Eretz, Bakoilhu, the Maila of a country, is in everything. Melech Lesodeh Nevod. The king is meshubit to the field, to the farmer. Because actually, Rabbi said, the king is more meshubit to the farmer than the farmer is meshubit to the king. Right? Because the farmer has to pay taxes and follow certain amount of rules, and that's it. But when the farmer wants roads to be able to transport his goods to the city and sell them, he wants price regulation, he wants a good economy, he comes banging on the door of the Melech and he tells the Melech, listen, Melech, but you're here to help me. You're the buck stops by you, not by me. Ultimate responsibility for everything in the land devolves upon the Melech. Right? And the Melech would feel that responsibility. And he's achroi for the kingdom. That's a gewaltige Meile. The achrayus is, I mean, we find Chazal say in the beginning of Brachos, everybody learned that, everyone started Brachos, huh? And what does it say over there? That David HaMelech got up in the morning and they came to him and banging on his door, Am Chatzrichim L'Parnosa. Right? So he had to show them that HaParnosa. Kseder, the Melech is achroi for the whole kingdom. He has to carry the oil of every single individual on his shoulders. So a real Melech is nothing more than a glorified Eved. I was marach on that on a couple of different occasions. Yosef said, they said, HaMolech Timloch Oleinu, right? Im Moshel Timshel Bonu. Right? What does it say, Im Moshel Timshel Bonu? That's already something else. The Moshel is Wadavka, the Melech. The Moshel is someone who glorifies in controlling others. He's not just a Melech, but he's a Moshel. He suppresses others. He controls them. He forces them to follow his will. And he shows that he's stronger and more influential than them. Right, that's why the pasuk says in Tehillah, "Im ruach haMoshel tale olecha makoimcha al tanach." If the spirit of being a Moshel rises up on you, don't leave your old place. Don't follow that calling to try to be a Moshel to trample on other people's heads. Like Chazal would say, that beautiful expression, to be poiseya al roshei am kodesh, to step over the heads of am kodesh, because some people, that to them is a dream that fills their mind with excitement. Someday they're going to be powerful and strong. Everybody will feel the force of their authority. They'll grind everybody into the dirt, and they'll make for themselves big palaces and be mishavi the rest of the society around them to be a bunch of monkeys. The Ruach HaMoshe was a terrible Yetzirah. So when they spoke to Yosef, they said, HaMolech Timloch Aleinu, you want to be a Melech? Im Moshel Timshel Bonu? But apparently you want to be a Moshel as well. You want to be Mashpil us, so that we should be controlled by your Memsholot. That's what you want to do, that's what you dream of. There's another halacha also, Rabbi said. In Brachos, if you look into the sugis and chaloimus, the Gemara says that many chaloimus are not nevuas at all. Many chaloimus, in fact most, are nothing more than thoughts that people have all day long, and it enters their unconscious mind, like we say today, and it becomes a chol. Right? Here, bakula yoyim v'chozir v'chelma b'leliyah. He thought about it all day long, and he saw it by night in a dream. Because the thoughts that just rumble in your brain without a stop eventually become the things that you dream about. And actually what they were telling Yosef was like this. They also were Baki and Luchas Cholim. But what they're telling Yosef was, your dream is not a Nebuah type of dream. Right? So which might be Kol HaChalayim HaSelech HaRapeh. Your dream comes because you're thinking all day long about being Moshe, you know, being Moilach Aleinu. Right? So you have that ambitiousness, and it took over your whole mind, and that's what you're thinking of. So therefore, HaMoloch Timloch HaMoshel Timshol. Right? And that's why Vayesifu Eitznoyas HaLecholim HaSelech HaLecholim, because it revealed, this is what they held, the dream revealed what was going on in his mind the whole day long. Right? He's not the nice guy that he claims to be. He's a person who has a plan, right? And he's building his career on the backs and the heads of all of them. That's what they said. A marshal, molech timlech, a marshal timshal. And you think into it, their voice, you hear the whole parasha light up. But they accused him of Moshoel Timshol as well as Molech Timlech, which aggravates the idea of Melucha and turns it into a different type of Melucha. People are jealous even of a good Melech. There's no question. They'd rather be the Melech instead of the other one. They'd rather stand up there and get all the covet. Even if the Melech is the most perfect Melech. But Melucha only invites jealousy. Memshola invites hatred. Because Memshola is something that's harmful to the Nim, the person who the Memshola is over. Now, you take a look at Ahafo de Gezach. It says later when it describes what Yosef was doing in Mitzrayim. It says, V'Yosef hu ha-shalat al ha-oret, Toshtet Vaiter, hu ha-mashbir l'chol am ha-oret. He was the ruler, and he was like a grocer. He was feeding the people. So, it describes the Meluch of Yosef. He was a shalat. A shalat is a melech. Right? But what did he do with his memshalah? Hu hamashpir l'chol am ha'aretz. Right? That's in Parashas Miketz. Which means he provided food. Right? That's what shever means. Yes, shever b'mitzroy. Hu hamashpir l'chol am ha'aretz. He's providing food for it. So he used his malchus not to be a Moshe, but he used his malchus in the best, finest way to help and to service people, to build them up, rather than to lower them. So Gevaldik Yisrach, because a melech who conducts his malchus properly, raises everybody, builds everybody up to the sky. Hu hamashpir l'chol am ha'aretz. Later, you see the Hafudik Pasik, I hold that Mamish Oyum Benoir, if you look at the words, it says when Yosef spoke to his brothers in Parshas Vayigash, what did he tell them? Ra'ato alta yotzvu va'al yichar beinechem kilu michyo shlachani elokim lefnechem. That's what the Pasik says in the beginning of Vayigash, right? Ra'ato alta yotzvu, don't be upset. Va'al yichar beinechem, don't be angry. So what does the Pasuk mean? So the Pasuk means like this. Don't be angry that I'm a melech. Why? Because the Eibishter did it for a purpose to help you. It's all part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. Right? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has ways of carrying out his plan, right? And everything that happens is revealed eventually in the beginning and along the road, along the way. It seems as if it's the wrong thing and you're upset by it. But now I'll tell you what's true, I'll give you a right? I wanted to hear it a little different touch. What did Yosef tell them? I'll tell you what's true. What upset you in the beginning? It upset you that Moloch Timloch Aleinu, Moshel Timshel. It upset you because you thought that my malchus is going to be, what kind of malchus? Huh? It'll be a malchus of memshol. Now you see what kind of malchus. Al yichav einechem, why? Ki lemichya shlachani elikim lefnechem. Take a look at what kind of malchus I'm conducting over here. I'm conducting a malchus where I'm servicing the people and I'm providing you with food and life. That kind of malchus is nothing to be upset at. Understand? Ki lemichya shlachani elikim lefnechem. How funny is that? Because you see in those words, so he's telling them at the end, I know that's what upset you, the Marshal Timshal aspect of it. But take a look at Yichav Enecha, Kilomichya Shulchan Yelukim Osnecha. Right, why did they say over? Because when they said it over, they weren't faket, they said it with pride. Other than that, they were already happy with Moshe, they were happy with everything. Once they were satisfied that he wasn't a Balgaiv and trying to lord over them, so right away they took pride in his accomplishments. Right, Maruva, because he sensed that they were already Mistama, it would be a Psyra Taiva for Yankov. But at that time he sensed that they weren't upset anymore. And just to finish off the little parsha, the second chol. What was the second chol? The second chol was that he said Hashemesh ve'ereh, right? Be'achad osa kechov mishtach b'mli. So, in a certain way, that's a terrible chol. He's saying that the stars and the sun, the moon, and ani v'yimkav v'achechol mishtach v'slocha orza. But again, let's think into it. Who was Yosef in that chol? Huh? He was a person standing on the earth. And who are his brothers? Stars in the sky. Right? His father and mother, the sun and the moon. So, there was Takeish Tachboa and everything. So, in the Cholim, he was represented as a human being. They were represented as Kofay HaShemayim. So, the other way around, you know, would have meant that he was mashpul them. He would have been bashamayim, and they would be al ha'oretz, like it says, "Kilakim bashamayim va'ato al ha'oretz." Okay, you dvarecha me'yatir. But if he made them bashamayim and himself al ha'oretz, so it was weiter in the cholim. It showed that his attitude towards his brothers was one of a tremendous haruch. He looked at their ma'ilah, right, that their kikoch v'yashamayim, which is the biggest bracha. Kachar Shemayim is something always used for a muscle, for a double gottle, right? Matzika Harabim Kikachovim Lonon Boy. Kachov is, in our own language, here in America we say a star is someone who's very, very successful. Maybe it's Kedai, but I just now, even though next week Be'ez Hashem is Shabbos Chanukah, it'll be in the middle of Chanukah, but so maybe it's Kedai to say a few words about Chanukah. At the end of the whole parsha of Bechiras Yosef, the pasuk ends with Vayikra Yaakov Samloisa Vayosam Sak Bemosno Vayisabu Al Bano Yomim Rabim Vayikumu Kolbonim Vachol Benoisa Vanachmoy Vayimoyim Lesnachim. And he cried Vayev Koy Sayoviv Oviv goes on Yitzchok. But Yaakov Avinu had a tremendous tzor. So there were 22 years of tzor. We know already from before, it says, Vayova Yankov Sholem, near Shechem. So Chazal say Sholem in three things, right? Sholem begufay, shenesapay mi salatoy, Sholem b'mamoynoy, right? Sholei chosev dover mikol mashenosem le'esav, and Sholem b'toyosev. Because even though he had the Torah of Esav and the Torah of all the other Torahs, love him. But Sof Kol Sof, Sholem b'toyosev. Yaakov Avinu was always Sholem b'toyosev. The Tsar didn't take away from his Torah. Many people, you know, they have tzar, so they sit and think about the tzar all day long and about nothing else. Others, even if they don't think about their tzar all day, but Sof Kol Sof, they lose their cheshik, they lose their alertness, and their mind is low functioning because of the heavy load that lays on the shoulders. But it's the unique ability of the Adam Gadol to be able to continue to function in the high functioning way that he's used to, whether he's happy or not happy. It's good to be happy. Pikud Hashem Yishor Mesam Chilev and learning Torah Misimcha, even with Hashem Misimcha, is a good thing. But what if a person is in a matzah where it's impossible for him to be Sameach? Most people can't possibly function, and they not Sholem b'Toyosei. But the Gadol b'Toyer is able to do that. And being Sholem b'Toyosei allows him to develop during the time of Choshech, during the time of Tzar. So, even though Yaakov Avinu said, Ma'at v'royim hoi yimeshnei chayai, Sof Kol Sof, the Kitat Emes LeYaakov, Yaakov Avinu was always Oisik B'Torah. Where I had, his powers of concentration were enormous. He didn't sleep for 14 years in Beis Medrash HaShalever. He didn't sleep regular sleep for 20 years in the time of Lovan. It says, Batidat Shnosim Me'ainoi. Because the total concentration was able to have his mind functioning on the highest level possible up to the Kisei HaKovod without being held back by the external problems that he had, although they did affect his mood and, like we would say them every day, the quality of life. But it was definitely It didn't destroy Yaakov Avinu. Because I'll speak about the tremendous Madregas, not only during the earlier times when he was in Beis Medrash HaShel Yitzchok, before the Beis Medrash HaShel Shem, and later in Beis Medrash HaShel Eder. But even during the time of Lavan, while he was out in the field, and he was out in the cold and the ice, Achalani Choyrev, the Kerech Maloilu, Achol Pikein, it says that for those 20 years he was Miyachid Yichudim all the time, which was the highest level of Chochmah. That was the koyach of the concentration of Yaakov Avinu. This negates very much to Chanukah Rabbeisai for the following reason. Medrash in the Bereishis it says, Lo'or etzoy sasoy v'loy v'loy. The Choshech of the Meisahoyim. So it lists out the Golias, the Arba Golias. And one of them is the Golas Yovan. It says the Golas Yovan is Choshech. So I'm sure that Lodroch spoke about that very often. The Golas Yovan is Choshech. Choshech is particularly associated with Yovan for the following reason. Choshech is a time when you can't distinguish between one thing and the other because it's dark. Everything seems to be blurred, blended one with another. It's hard to make out the features. That's why the morning when the sun starts to come up and it's light and you could distinguish things one from another, it's called boiker. In Ezra brings boiker from the Lashon Levakir. Distinguish, to examine. It's a time for examining. And when it starts getting dark, so it's called Erev. Erev comes from the Lashon Taruvit. It's Arvu Hatzura, the lines of the that define one object from another become blurred. You can't see things clearly. So the whole idea of Yovan Rabbeinu, wasn't the goal similar to the other goals. It was a time where the Chochmas Yevonis was prevalent. In fact, Alexander, who created that big Malchus Yovan that swept over the world, was careful to set up in each city that he conquered and founded libraries, schools, which taught the wisdom of Yovan, philosophers and the mathematicians, all the Chachma Yovan and all their writings and teachings were all spread out through the world. Was not the Malchus Yovan per se, but it was the Mithyavnim, the people in Klal Yisrael who Hellenized themselves. But Hellenized means that they acted like Greeks. They dressed, thought, acted, behaved like Greeks in every which way. Greek is called in the Greek language Hellas. That's why Hellenized means just that. They were Mithyavnim. And what that did was to confuse. That was the time of Choshech, because the Chochmas HaTorah is the only clarity that we have. And that's the Emes. The Torah is Emes and the Torah is Chochmas. And it's only through the eyes of the Torah that we're able to distinguish one thing from another and separate truth from Sheker. But when there's Choshech, you can't do that anymore because it's dark. You can't see. Choshech blends together Emes and Sheker and turns it into one big model of chaos. And that was what went on during the time of Choshech. But the other hand, I would say, during that period of time, and before that we had the Zugois, who were, you know, Yossi, then Yochanan, and Yossi ben Yehezer, and their Talmidim, who it says that they were the Ishkolos, right? Butlov Ishkolos, they were people who had everything. And they were my own Talmidim, they were my own Yeshivas, and they were my Rastor of Yisroel. Hillel and Shammai were a product of those times. And the Beis Hillel and the Beis Shammai, people who Chazal described as being in the league of Moshe Rabbeinu and Yeshua, the Nun. And perhaps the Choshech contributed a little bit to it. Why? Because Choshech, Rabbi Say, makes it sometimes so dark that you can't see a lot of things, and in order to see anything you got to strike a light, and if you have a light that doesn't chase away the Choshech is still there. It limits your field of vision to only a small area. So too when Yidden are in lands where there's no Choshech at all, there's no goals, there's no oppression, there's no, everything is fine, they're equal, just like here in America. So it's all life, it's beautiful. We're part of the world, right? We have Orthodox Jews almost becoming vice president. And living in every part of the country, no limits. The old country clubs that didn't allow Jews to become members, that only happens in history books now. And what does that do to us? It gets us involved with the whole world around us. So too much light is no good, right? You know, the time when Yidden wanted to get involved with the rest of the world was called the Enlightenment. That's called. They felt that they could make a few cracks in the wall and admit some of the light from the outside. Choshech sometimes is not the catastrophe and the disaster that it might seem. Now there, the time of real quality learning is Lila. No. Abdei Hashem ha'imdim v'veith Hashem b'leilois, right? Whoever learns Torah b'leilois, chut shel chesed nimshech olav. Because the Lila has a certain beneficial effect on Torah. It diverts your attention from the world around you, which you could participate in and be part of and be influenced by. And creates a tremendous amount of bittul Torah and a bittul of Torah de kashkofes. But sometimes when there's choshech and there's nothing we could do, so we have to get far away from that world. Like the pasuk says, and I quoted it recently: Lechani boy b'chaderecha, eskor loscha b'adecha. Go into your room, close the door behind you, shut the door. And those rooms that you're going to go into is batik nasiyas, batik midrashes. The world is hostile. The world is a world of choshech. So that's it. You got to lock the doors. It's no longer safe to go out into the world. Not just because of the suicide bombers and the others. It's no longer safe because there's hashkofas, koizvas that attack us and make tremendous inroads into quality stroke. So you got to be wary of what could happen. That's why the choshech is. Sometimes siyua, not such a terrible thing, although we still have that feeling of glumness when it's dark. It's still not the most encouraging condition to be in. And it does take away from our happiness. Especially when we're not just dark, but limited, and surrounded by a hostile world, and endangered all the time. It hurts, but despite the fact that it has all these negatives thrown to it, it does serve to focus our thinking inwardly, the Torah, the Yiddishkeit, the Rebbeinu Shlom, rather than let it just spread about in all directions. And make us aware of a thousand other things that should capture our attention and share place in our mind with the Torah. So there is a certain Mailon Choshech, Rabbi said. The years of Yaakov Avinu's Avelus, sad, very big, very unhappy, very destructive to his appearance, Rabban explains when Pari asked him, how come you look so old? He said, I'm not really that old, it's just because of my tzoras. So, Yaakov Avinu was able then to have no concern in the world but the Rebbeinu Shlom and his Torah, because the rest of the world was a bitter one. And so the normal inyonim of Mishpacha and Achatuach just were things that he couldn't be soiled. That was the world of Adelus. In the middle, there was nothing left but the world of Torah. And Vayisar Chanukah focuses exactly on that. It reminds us of what took place by Yomim Ohem Basman Hazeh, the time when the Choshech of Golus Yavuk enveloped Klal Yisrael and did tremendous damage through the Choshech. Pulled away a large share of Klal Yisrael, became a siyavnim, but it took the Chachmei HaTorah inward. There was no longer a world out there to participate in, like there was before, when the Chachamim were part of the government, part of the outside world as well as the inside world. and there was Sanhedrin, and there was everything else in which the Chachmei Torah participated. Now, during the time of Choshech, there was an internal world which gave Klal Yisrael some tremendous yisoid, which provided for the explosion of Torah that took place later. Don't forget what came out of the Inyan of Chanukah was the Tkuf of Tanoim, followed by the Tkuf of Amoroim, and so on. It's not a mere accident. And that's why the mitzvah of Chanukah, as soon as darkness comes, that's when the mitzvah begins. You have to take a light outside to the street and light it in the darkness. A small candle which doesn't chase away the darkness. But what it does is to create a single point of light where the darkness is not shoyut. The darkness has no effect. The darkness is away to the right, to the left, above and below, but there where the light is burning, the Yid could stand and be mitzvah the mitzvahs, Kadesha Yehei Yisrael, mitzvah the mitzvahs. And the right side is the mezuzah, and the left side is the Hanukkah. And right there on the spot is the door which he could close and shut out the rest of the world. And behind him there's a home that he could turn into a Mokum Kodesh and use it for Torah and for Kedusha. So Hanukkah is the yontif that internalizes Klal Yisrael. That's why the mitzvah's neir issue basic, right? It's the family, it's the home where the union of neir Hanukkah is. And we take a look at the whole setup, which just exactly parallels what took place then. Not just because there was a menorah that burned. But that's, we don't even say that by Taner Salol. That's the whole Indian. Yisecha Nikloi, Yisecha Yeshua, Yisecha. Everything. Because it identified with Klal Yisrael. In fact, when we say in Al Nisim, Asarta, right? Kiborim, Yachaloshim, Tmeim, Yatahoyim, Yeshoyim, Yatzadikim, Zedim, Yadayim, Yisecha. When that happens, Rabbi says, besides the conquest and the victory of the Yeshoyim, of the Tzadikim of the Yeshoyim, it also identifies who is the Tzadik and who is the Yerusha, who is the Tommy and who is the Torah, who is Mezid and who is Aitzkei Torah. It gives us a clear delineation. It draws a line in the sand on one side, the other people on the other side. There's no longer that blending and that confusion. And the light of Ner Hanukkah defines. It's a defining light. It opens up the eyes, drives away the choshech, and shows us the world, the clear realities of a world of which we hope to have no part of, because that's the world of choshech. By day, there's an illusion. By day it appears to be the opposite, that the world of Choshech seems to be the world of Or, and they have beautiful names that they give themselves. The big economic powers, the superpowers, the world of Western civilization, and this and that, who knows what else. And they gratify themselves by thinking that they're out there and they're the Olam HaSichli. And they'll use all kinds of terms for us, right? They'll have a group of Rotschim and Rishon of the worst order. Terrorists who call themselves fundamentalists, and then they'll take all of the Olam HaTorah and say that we're Jewish fundamentalists. That's what they say between themselves, and a lot of the world sees this as a natural consequence of intensified religion. To be a fundamentalist. And a fundamentalist means you go around killing people and blowing yourself to bits in the process. That's the definition of the word. You look it up in the dictionary. Fundamentalist means kafka. That's not true at all. Where the yontif of Torah, and then the yontif of Emes, Yom Tov of clarity, of light in the darkness. And whatever it stood for all the way back in the very beginning, which it was precisely that, it's the same thing today. Hanukkah is a zman when we could relive what happened by Yom Ha'en Bat Manaseh. So we're back to Bayom Lahem, and we transpose what happened by Yom Ha'en Bat Manaseh. Although the word Bat Manaseh, as I said, means it's a date in the calendar, that's the Pasha Chet. It doesn't mean, right, Bat Manaseh like we usually use it in the vernacular, meaning in modern times, the world that we live in today is Bat Manaseh. But the word Bismanaseva, when it's next to Bayom Ha'en, means Chofei Kislev in the next 7 days afterwards. That's Bismanaseva. But nevertheless, we always use Bismanaseva to mean in the world that we live in. And we're linking Bayom Ha'en to Bismanaseva. Choshech, we dispel the Choshech, provide a channel for Amitius HaTorah, and it gives us a tremendous feeling of courage to look forward to the future, to see and to visualize the Gula Shlema, where it will be Umol Ha'aretz Deyas Hashem Kamayim LaYom Echad. Of course, we have all their books. Aristotle and Plato, the Socrates, and we have the play. Well, it's a provider. We have the astronomy that they had, the Hipparchus, we have the mathematics. You know, when you went to 10th grade, you learned Euclid in geometry. Yeah. Who is Euclid, if not for one of the Sakhma Yoga? No?
No. So, I'm saying, but that's not that the actual examiner, that I'm saying, what is precisely that you don't want to back up with that?
Chokhmah is still going to know how to resolve the problem in a triangle. It's not going to cut the Torah. But the philosophy of Socrates and Plato, take a look anywhere in the world today at what's going on about the value of human life and the what they would call alternative lifestyle, the schmutz that there is in the URIs, Shichas Dom, Mabu Yizorot, all throughout their philosophy. That's why they sentenced Socrates to death, because he was corrupt and they used it. And it was a very big way. Everything had to be rational, everything had to be explained, anything that wasn't was torn apart completely. I visualized a world where everything would be mutter. And although there was deep chokhmah there, but it was not practical. It was an anti-Torah chokhmah. Aristotle was somewhere in between, because he believed in a very, very ethical world. He was against a lot of what Plato said, and Rambam felt that a lot of the chokhmah that he said was provided an insight for us into the philosophy of Torah. But nevertheless, people who are Isaac in these chokhmahs, even in Aristotle's writings, the vast majority of them went away from Torah. They were captivated by a different way of thinking completely. You know, when the eagerest to the Talmud says, don't look in Aristotle, look at the excerpts that I'll provide you. Because if you look at it, you'll be humbled.
Well, what were like the Chachman was stemming from so what was about the Chachman that attracted the mind of Will?
The first of Will was a golden age of Chachman. You know, the essence of Pericles. Right.
And this chokhmah isn't attractive to others. Right. We don't have that chokhmah that attracts us.
Well, to a certain degree, all the chokhmah that the world has today is a takeoff on what they had. They wrote texts on astronomy. There was poetry and plays, which they had. Theaters. They're studied in schools today, aren't they, John?
There's no people that believe like the Aristotle. Nobody could have included in Aristotle.
You ever, how do you know?
Huh?
How do you know? You ever read Aristotle? Yes.
I read a lot of the plays. But the people that I studied with, because nobody.
Plato, but Aristotle's ethics. There's two books on ethics, and the Nicomachean ethics.
Yeah, after Kant, everybody said there was no.
What?
After Kant, he like destroyed the whole thing, yeah?
That's what they tell you in a college philosophy course, Bill. Not everything is built on Kant's rationalism. And the behavior of regular ethics, where a person's supposed to conduct himself. A lot of the different Muslims, behavioral ethics have nothing to do with Kant.
A lot of Plato's stuff is not. They say that Plato, a lot of the reason why they don't like Socrates is because he was going against what they were saying, what they were practicing. It was a maturity that is out there in ancient Greece.
That's what the teachers will tell you, the books tell you. But if you take a look at Plato, you'll see from beginning to end there's homosexualism. There's a single dialogue that doesn't have a little bit of it.
Yeah, of course, there were proofs in Amiens, but they weren't.
But they were the reason why there were proofs in it is because they threw off all inhibitions and all limitations. Because everything had to be rational in the middle. There was nothing that could control a person's behavior. And in Plato's Republic, he speaks about a world where we have a whole scale community of wives and everything. It's really criticized by Aristotle later.
I read the symposium.
Yeah.
So Socrates says that the symposium, the idea of love is all sickly. It's not even.
And since it's all sickly, so therefore you can do anything you want because it's really.
That's what everybody else is saying. Socrates. So he says the highest madriga is something that connects on the circumbica, on the circumbica level.
Platonic friendship. But if once you connect, so what your personal actions don't have to be in control.
So we're saying cognitive science is basically a rationalization of everything? It's like the root of it is all rationalization?
Well, that's what they focused on, the complete rationalization, keep away from all the, all the taboos from the previous world. They accomplished a lot. They built the Athenian school of wisdom from. There's hundreds and hundreds of books. There's not just single ones. It was a world filled with teaching and thinking. Today the Greeks are the duck workers. The people. That's what the Yudal Levi writes. The entire Greek Chochma came during two dairies. So he says they got it all from the Yidden who went to Golis by the Vaisrish. Because till then there was no Chochman. After that there was no Chochman. But the truth that if there was a later Chochman, the Alexandrian priest, the Ptolemy, Euclid, they were the Alexandrian priest. But they didn't go so much into philosophy, they learned the sciences. But during. This is Chacham Sivonis, is the time of Nes Chanukah. It's the time that they were all in Messiah. The youth of Klal Yisrael was drawn to it. But hey, they dressed like that, they did. It was the modern world, the enlightened world. But Chazal called it Choshech because that's what it really is. No.